are back. This is the Linux Show, coming to you live from here in the suburbs of Chicago, bringing you another edition of our weekly show. It's March 2nd, 2004. Volume 7, month three, I should say. And we'll be continuing to bring these two shows to you every week. Hope you're all out there listening, enjoying, and supporting us in whatever way you can to build our community here at the Linux Show. We are growing, as you know, if you've been a regular listener. I want to start out tonight, before we even bring any of the rest of the crew in, to make an announcement. I told everybody that in the IRC last week they're going to want to make sure that they do indeed catch tonight's show to listen for a special announcement. I have been working on the details of this for many weeks, and there will be a press release issued tomorrow sometime, but it is official. The Linux Show is going to go daily. I've got finally got a couple sponsors lined up, and we're going to be doing a daily show. Completely different format from what we're doing here on the Tuesday night show. It's going to be a real short 15 to 30 minute long segment, a real quickie news review show. More details of that will follow in the future, as soon as we've got all the plans of who's going to do what shows and when. Our kickoff, or my planned kickoff, is I'm going to start doing some test shows for the Daily Show, hopefully by Monday of next week. I was really hoping to get one or two of them done this week, but it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. Things ran into the end of the quarter here at the school that I teach at, and things are just too jammed up. So we're going to start the Daily Show probably next Monday. But hang in there. Watch for the press release. The press release will hit Linux PR sometime tomorrow. We'll have more details. But the whole crew is here tonight, so we'll go ahead and say hello to everybody. How are you tonight, Arnie?
Oh, doing fine. It's very cold in here, and my office is very cold because we've had quite a bit of rain the last
week. California, isn't that illegal?
Yeah, I know, but I don't have any heat in my office, and so other than the computers. And it gets kind of chilly in here. My hands get cold on the old keyboards.
Well, poor man.
Poor, yeah, I know. You guys are just crying
yeah,
for me.
Actually, you know, for winter, we've been having 40 degrees all week. So for winter, you know, we got nothing to complain about.
It's in the 50s here, and it's cool.
Yeah. Last night it got down to about 36 degrees, which still, for this time of year, in Chicago, we consider that shirt sleeve weather.
It's balmy.
Yep. So we are not complaining one bit. Doc will hopefully be joining us shortly, also out in California, along with Arnie. Doc is in the process of moving right now from one house to the house next door. Go figure. I guess that's something they do in California.
Thank you.
But Doc will be joining us eventually as soon as he can find a phone to call in on. But off on the other end of the country, Russ Pavlicek, how are you doing tonight, Russ?
Oh, hanging in. Things are pretty good here. I mean, it's been a crazy time here. We actually got up to about 70 degrees. So we've been enjoying life. And, of course, I'm about to embark on a business trip back to Minnesota. So I get back into the deep freeze again. Joy of joys. But things here at least have thawed.
Take your cross country skis.
Yeah, right.
Can't they do their Minnesota business meetings like in July when it'll get up to 50?
One would hope, but you know, I figure this is motivation for us to button things up in a hurry, so we don't have to stay that long.
Yeah. Now I know the comment I just made is not too far from a joke. I once went camping in Minnesota. Granted, it was northern Minnesota, and it was the last week of June, and it snowed. And it's cold in Minnesota. Very, very cold. Well, Kevin and I are sitting here in the suburbs of Chicago, and we are juicing up the equipment, growing it and making it ready for the future for those people who have been emailing me and IRCing me all week long. Yes, our new system is coming soon. Yes, you will be able to call in to the Linux show and join us in conversations soon, but that's probably about 6 weeks out. It is a pretty complicated piece of technology that we're building, but hang in there. Have a little patience.
And Jeff, you missed one.
Oh, Eric?
Yep,
are you
I'm
right
here.
There? Hi, Eric.
And I have a rant to utter.
And this is surprising?
No, it shouldn't be.
Okay, before we go any further, is this at me?
No. No. This is, in fact, at the developers of Sane and X-Sane.
Uh-huh.
But not insane.
It is a bit of a follow-up to a rant you may have heard about or read this week. Did any of you see my postings on the luxury of ignorance?
Yes, indeedy.
Okay.
Indeed, we did.
So you know that I have spent considerable time recently excoriating bad design decisions in user interfaces. Well, I've got another one. And this one is trying to set up a scanner under Fedora Core 1. Tried to get Xsane to work. It told me no devices available. It lied.
Mm-hmm.
There were devices available, it just couldn't figure out how to configure them. And there's a world of difference between a pop-up that says, no devices available, and one that says, I see a scanner here, but I can't figure out how to talk to it.
Yes.
So,
And that doesn't give you a clue as to the direction you really need to be going into.
That's right.
Yeah.
And this leads into a general rant about superficially friendly interfaces, which give you plenty of information when everything goes right, but the moment something goes wrong, you're back to a cryptic six-word message that tells you nothing. This is stupid. There is no excuse for it.
Yeah, well, I can't fight with you on this one.
Just as an FYI, too, I thankfully had a very different experience with a scanner on Mandrake 9.2. They have it so that Kuka kicks in as soon as it sees it, and actually brought up a very nice little window which on my wife's machine shows a scanner and it shows another device and it says, I'm not sure which one of these is a scanner, which one would you like? And you click the button and boom, everything just went with a
scanner. Since you brought that up.
Excuse me?
Since you brought that up, let me tell you what you have to do to get the Epson 1250 Perfection, which is, by the way, on their supported list to work. 1650. Epson 1650. To get it to work, you have to do the following. First of all, you have to poke magic numbers into etc. modules conf. Okay? With me? Then, you have to look in /etc/ /conf or something like that, the same private configuration thing in /etc, and you have to uncomment a cryptic line of text in that file. Okay? That's step two. Following me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
third, you have to write... Huh?
I said, yeah, go ahead. This is user-friendly.
Yes. Third, you have to write a custom initialization script to perform mod probes and then change the permissions on the USB scanner devices.
God.
Isn't that just lovely? And these people claim to be scanner access made easy?
Yeah.
Sounds easy to me.
Somebody should be severely thumped.
Yes.
And It's a good thing that I kept my notes on the last time I did this, or I would have probably had to spend more than half of a working day retracing my steps. We can't tolerate this shit anymore, people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it's just not good enough in 2004.
Yeah, well, the one where definitely the one where it steers in the wrong direction completely, I find that that's negligence, and it really is a total waste of people's time to have negligent code like that in programming today, and they just shouldn't release it if it's that problematic. It shouldn't be released. It shouldn't be a part of the distribution.
CUPS, by the way, has a very similar problem. This is not something I covered in my rant, published, but...
Well, yeah, in fact, I was going to ask, can I bring up something about the commentary you made about CUPS? Just as a point of interest, after you made your commentary on CUPS, it ended up being one of the relatively minor threads, but still it was a minor thread on the User Linux discussion email list last week. And watching the commentaries, people commenting about your rant, both in support and not in support of what you had ranted about CUPS, I was curious to ask you a question, and that is, when you make one of these observations, like you're doing today about the scanners, or like you did last week about CUPS, do you like it when people aren't happy with your comments or don't understand your comments, do you like it when they actually contact you directly, or do you just sort of like this sort of commentary to just work its way through the community on its own weight? Do you like addressing the controversy, I guess, is what I'm asking?
That's okay if they contact me directly.
Okay. I'm just curious, because when you, again, this is similar to the discussion we were having last week, when you publish commentaries like this, white papers and things like that, you know, the potential for generating hundreds, if not thousands, of emails is pretty remarkable. I can certainly testify to it with the volume of email that goes through my email.
But. Well, on the other hand, Jeff, I figure this is my job. I mean, in a community like this, I hate to use the word leadership because I don't like the connotations of power politics that go with being called a leader, so I try to avoid being called one. In a community like this, to the extent there's a leadership job, the leadership job basically consists of getting the right people to talk to the right other people and listening to the community feedback so that you know what's going on. So dealing with the kind of feedback and the kind of pushback that I get from publishing these white papers, that's an important part of my job.
Yeah, I suppose that's the right attitude to take on it. That's for sure.
I have to tell you, I don't know whether you saw my follow-up to the original rant, but one of the things that I find most interesting and most pleasing about the community reaction to that first paper is the number of people who basically said, you know, I thought it was just me that was disgusted with Linux user interfaces. I thought everybody else was more or less cool with it. And so I think what's happening now is a lot of people who privately didn't think that these crappy interfaces were good enough, I think maybe now they'll be more emboldened to speak up in public and discover that they have company. That's my hope anyway.
I think that's a really good criticism. In fact, one of the, well, you may disagree with this comment completely, but one of the most influential people in the IT business is a young guy by the name of Chris Perillo. And Chris Perillo makes a lot of money off of commenting about product. And he has historically savaged Linux primarily because of the user interface.
Mm-hmm.
And he has also savaged Microsoft because of their user interface. He has always taken the approach that everything needs to be measured up against the best, the most comfortable, the easiest to use, the user interface available, and that's always been the Macintosh. And
which, by the way, I agree with him about.
But all of the all the criticisms that Chris has made about Linux over the years has been really very valid, but has sort of fallen on deaf ears to a degree.
The Windows interface can be a bit of a nightmare, and people kind of rave. The Windows users rave about it, and it's like if you want to do something,
sometimes
you just can't be done.
They do.
Well, I rave at it, maybe. I don't know.
However, there is an important difference between me and Chris Perillo, and it's the reason why I wrote that rant after thinking about it.
Yep.
The difference is nobody can accuse me of not being sufficiently old school. Okay? Considering that I was writing Unix code before, most of the people who are writing Linux applications now were born. Well, maybe not most of them, but a substantial cohort. I mean, I started writing Unix code in 1982. Nobody can accuse me of not loving the command line enough, okay? And that's the big difference from Chris Perillo. I think it's harder for JRandom Linux developer to ignore me, and that's why I'm out there ranting, because I really want people to wake up and start building software that they can take pride in when their grandmother uses it.
Yep, I agree. I agree. Any more rants?
That's about it.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and move on into segment one, number one of the show tonight, and if you feel like hanging out and joining in, feel free to do so. Russ, you have a whole list of links that you sent into the show tonight. What would you like to talk about first?
Okay, that's... let's see, where should we begin? I think... let's go for some low-hanging fruit here. There's a link up there at cnetnews.com about Linux server sales show high-end trend. And, for those of us in the community, this is probably not a surprise. However, I have a feeling this will be stunning to a number of IT pundits out there that have still insist that Linux is a low-end play. That, is it ready for the enterprise? You still have that debate going on, despite the fact that some of the stuff I've been exposed to in the last couple of months lets me know that that debate is over. The question now is where in the enterprise does a given enterprise use Linux? That's the deal right now. And this particular article is just dealing with basically sales numbers and saying that for the number of units sold, profit is up, and revenue is up, and the assertion there then is that obviously these are more expensive machines than have been sold in the past. This I can believe, because I've dealt with some interesting things having to do with blades and whatnot recently. And yes, there is a most clear market forming in the enterprise space for reasonably expensive Linux servers doing reasonably large things. So this is one of those things to throw under your boss's nose if he's giving you a bunch of stuff about how Linux is only good as an edge play system. It is not true, and the market is proving it is not true, because people are buying it for bigger things.
So it's interesting to ask a question. What is the next stage of denial going to be?
Well, you know, some of these old saws have been around for so long that when is Linux? Linux is not ready for prime time. Linux has been prime time for years now. So
let me see. Let me see if I can anticipate what the next stage of. Okay, so it's not just an edge play, but it isn't ready for mission critical. That'll be the next stage of denial.
Well, there's been that rap lying around for a while, but yeah, I think that becomes the they lose ground on the front. That's probably the next line that has to be drawn to defend the territory. But it's,
and we can point them towards the NSA's version of Linux if it's not mission critical.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the thing that a lot of people are not keeping on their radar, and it wasn't huge on mine until recently, is the whole grid computing field. There is an amazing amount of stuff that's going on there, and the thing is, a lot of companies are not talking about it because, frankly, it's too important to them to speak up about. But the developments there. The lion's share are on Linux for rather obvious reasons. Number one, of course, being cost per unit licensing. If you've got 1,000 servers running, you don't want to be paying $500 each for software. But even more importantly is that the open source nature means that as new drivers and new facilities have to be built around the new reality of these large grids of systems, it can be done. You don't have to wait for the software factory at the Great Northwest there to deem it important enough to put something together. You can do it, and that's where a lot of the innovation, dare I say, is coming about inside that field, and it is most determinedly enterprise. I mean, it's almost nothing but enterprise. You know, there was the early stuff that was kind of massive edge play, large web server farms. That isn't the field anymore.
It's there, but that's not the new field.
Yeah. That's not what's driving what's going on here. We're talking about major financial modeling and stuff like this that's occurring out there, and that's pretty wild stuff, and Linux and open source are at the deal.
The banks and the large investment banks and investment firms have been online with Unix for years, and so when Linux came around a few years ago, they started moving over as a standard practice to play around with Linux, and you're seeing a lot of banks and financial institutions are wholly Linux based now.
Yeah,
and you see occasionally a news story about that, but this is happening, you know, underneath the surface of the water here. And face it, banks don't often talk about their technologies.
Yeah,
but believe me, it's Linux is there.
And the other
that's
thing,
where you're seeing the grid,
right? And the other thing I would say too is that what's happening hand in hand too is that there is a number of projects out there by these same institutions to look at Linux on the desktop deployments, not company wide necessarily, but starting with certain departments and stuff like this that would need what's out there. And those ones, from what I've seen, are not being driven by cost. They're being driven by functionality. And once again, gang, you know, that's an enterprise play. When things are being driven by function and not by cost at that point. So there's a lot of good stuff out there, and it's going to continue. Next up, I guess, is the story, once again, out on the Linux Show website about real software. And that's not real networks, but real software.
It's a bad title. It should be actual software or productivity software.
Well, real software is the name of the company. You know, it's not real networks, it's real software. But
yeah.
They have a product called Real Basic, and this is interesting in that they claim that Visual Basic applications can now be migrated to Linux using Real Basic.
Shudder.
And the interesting thing there, of course, as many of us know, is that there's a lot of VB programmers wandering around out there, and suddenly, if they have a reasonably simple migration path into the Linux world with a tool that looks and feels pretty much, what they're used to, and they can actually supposedly do cross compiles from their existing code, that opens a lot of interesting doors potentially, and so it's an interesting little tool.
Visual Basic isn't very useful without some of their the Microsoft libraries, including their SQL and their Access library, and a lot of Visual Basic applications use some of those proprietary libraries as a base. In fact, Microsoft has always sold Visual Basic as a front end to these other APIs that are connected with, like for instance, the Access engine and stuff like that. And I'm wondering how many problems Real Software is going to have bringing out real stuff. You know, the porting some of this VB stuff over to Linux. It could be problematic without the libraries.
Well, one of the things that they claim, at least in this article, is that they have connectivity to Oracle 9i, as well as support for SOAP and XML and some other things. So it'd be interesting to see. Yeah, it may not be the one size fits all thing, but if they're addressing enough things, it could be could get interesting. Either way, I think it kind of bears watching.
Maybe we can get some of those the Microsoft certified engineers over, to start putting, get Linux engineering certification.
I know, they're fairly brainwashed still, so. let me tell you, coming from a college that is like 90% Microsoft MCSE engineers on staff, the brainwash that I have to give the devil his due. Bill Gates of Microsoft has been very creative in brainwashing these people. They've been effective. So, what else, Russ?
Hmm?
More stories.
More stories, yeah. I got a couple other quickies. One is from Toronto, the Toronto Star. There's a little piece about Ballmer reportedly chuckling over the migration issues in Munich as Munich's trying to go from Windows to Linux, and he's laughing about the fact that it's, what they're saying now, it's more expensive to go with Linux. Well, the interesting thing is they always said that. That was the nature of the bid to begin with. But part of the bid, part of that understanding is that the cost would be in the migration, which is a one-time cost as opposed to a repeat cost. And he tries to poo-poo these things that this was done for political reasons, blah, blah, blah. But he does mention inside this article, he's quoted as saying that we will lose a few. And but it's becoming very real that they can't fight it, so they're going to flood it and try to write off the losses as being
political.
Yeah, political.
Yeah, rather than face up to the economic model, they're going to blame it on politics. First of all, you're absolutely right on. The fact that the quote-unquote news coming out of Germany, first of all, there's really no substantial data as of yet to make a judgment onto the success or failure of the city of Munich's changeover. It's still in progress. So it's way too early, way, way too early to judge anybody who has ever gone through a major conversion knows that one single error in defining a line item on a conversion, when you're talking about the scale of an entire city, can end up being a mistake of hundreds of thousands of dollars or even millions of dollars towards the cost of an overall project. And those kinds of errors are made all the time when you're doing accounting on the scale of a city. But still, it's far too early for Ballmer to making these claims that Linux is more expensive and blaming it on politics as they're lost. It's definitely
he's tremendously premature, and Munich is a large city, and if they're going all Linux, it's going to take long time.
It's going to take years.
Turn that huge ship the other direction.
That's going to take years.
And they're doing it in the way they ought to be doing it, and that is slowly, deliberately, thinking about what they're doing, and moving sections of their IT structure as they get it completed. And of course, they're going to have problems.
Yep.
I mean, this is, how could it be otherwise? You know, if you went the other way to Windows, there would be tremendous problems too.
Yeah, and in fact, I've lived through some transitions even within an Windows infrastructure that went way out of band when it came to the estimates. It happens all the time.
Yeah, and it, like just going from, for instance, a Windows 9X to a Windows NT is like, excuse me, this is as radical as going from Windows to Linux, for instance. It's,
yeah.
Things can get crazy. You can start with the existing software, you know, which is supposed to work, you know, but it doesn't.
Well,
yep.
Just to hit on a couple other fast stories, and then I'll punt to whomever else. There's one out there for news.com talking about Microsoft actually considering another update to XP, which is being dubbed XP Reloaded internally. And the interesting thing about that, and it's discussed briefly in the article, is the window of opportunity for Linux here. In particular, they say that if this update does come out, that it will have to throw Longhorn back even further, because it's the same organization that's producing both. The longer Longhorn stays as a future, the more opportunity we have in the immediate world to compete. Although there is another side to that, and that is that as long as Longhorn is sitting out there, they can constantly point fingers to the future, saying, "Oh, what you need to just wait a little longer till we get this great, wonderful thing out there delivered. Then all your problems will be solved."
Yeah. Well, I look at this story very suspect. Microsoft has had a business model that has, in large measure, been built upon two fundamental assumptions within the IT industry. Okay? And, you know, give me a little, you know, liberal sway here on these assumptions. But assumption number one is that for the ongoing foreseeable future, we're going to own, and when I say we're, I'm pretending like I'm Microsoft, right? Okay. So assumption number one is, for the foreseeable future, we're going to own the desktop space from the OEM marketplace. Assumption number two is that we are going to have, within our business plan, our corporate business plan, a pre-programmed obsolescence cycle where we are going to release a new service pack of our software approximately every 12 to 18 months. And so these two things combined can generate a very, very predictable cash flow in the billions of dollars. Okay? So now let's just take two points of reality of the IT industry. And well, let's take one point of reality and then a conjecture upon my part, and then I think we get to the heart of the story. That point of reality is, what has been the major news story now for the past two and a half months? The major story has been Linux on the desktop is here. Okay? Undeniable. It's been the major news story in all of the major IT press. Everybody's saying, okay, enterprises, get ready. Linux is ready. It's time to go. So that removes one half of Microsoft's predictable business model. They've lost a guarantee out of the OEM sector. Okay? Now, take that as a conscious recognition by Microsoft and the fact that they're looking at Longhorn. What happens if they come to the realization that Longhorn cannot be delivered within the next 12 to 18 months? What does that force them to do?
Well, they got to do something to bolster their...
They got a cash flow problem.
Hmm?
They have a cash flow problem.
Yep.
So they have to come out with service pack because they need to exercise that other half of their business model, which is that pre-programmed obsolescence of constantly telling the users there's a new service pack. So I know that this looks like a really good opportunity for open source software, and it probably is. But I think that this is a very conscious business decision on the part of Microsoft to ensure that they've got cash flow over the course, and I mean solid cash flow, because they're going to need billions to fight this war against open source. And so I think this is just simply that they don't think they can have Longhorn done in time. And so that they're gonna drop another version of XP on the market in 12 months, let all the consumers go out and buy their upgrade packs, throw another $100 at their PCs, make another $10 to $15 billion from Microsoft, and then in another 12 to 18 months after the release of that service pack, then we'll see Longhorn. I think that's what this is all about. It's just cash flow. Could be dead wrong, but that's my belief.
Well, certainly, I think it makes sense logically, because it does seem to be the way they play it.
It's their history.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, you know, I'm not, you know, a genius here. All I'm looking at is, you know, look at all the histories behind Windows 95 and all the service pack releases there, Windows 98 and those service pack releases there, NT and all the service packs there. You can take a chart and diagram it out. I mean, you just can. If I was inside of Microsoft and I could have gotten away with it for that long amount of time, I probably would have done it too. Any more stories, Russ? I know you got a couple more. We haven't started talking about any of the SCO stories.
Yeah, that's the one that gets interesting. And I don't see the link on the Linux Show webpage, but over at Linux Today, they do have the text of one of the latest SCO screeds, particularly the one where they announce that they've found a sucker, a buyer of their license. The interesting thing about the document is the wording in the document. And some people may have heard that apparently Sko got beat down in Germany a few days ago, and they were told that they cannot say that Linux has Sko's intellectual property unless they prove it, and apparently there's like about a 10,000 euro penalty if they do that, so they're not getting into that that water. But the interesting thing is this document. If you read their PR, and for those of us who have been inundated with their PR over the last several months, the amazing thing is that there's absolutely no mention of them supposedly owning IP in Linux. They make reference to Linux, they make reference to IP, they make reference to people buying licenses so that they will have a security or something like this. But that's it. They don't say the words that they've been saying loud and long for months. It's like their tongue has been cut out partially. And I don't know whether it's Germany or something else that's happened that's causing them to do this, but it's rather remarkable to compare this to most of their earlier PR pieces.
Oh, the press releases before were like they were coming fast and furious. I have a story just that's related to that, if I might just jump in here.
Go for it.
They've been talking about suing somebody, a Linux user, today.
It was the day.
Yeah, well, guess what? ZDNet is reporting, just up within the last few minutes, that Sko Group plans to begin the legal action for a Linux user on Tuesday. And there's two important things here. One, they've decided to postpone this till tomorrow, and they said they're going to announce before their conference call in the morning who the one or possibly two people they're going to sue are. And the other thing they've in this article is that they're going to sue somebody with a Sko license.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
So Sko, in their incredible bright wisdom, is going to sue their own customer.
Welcome to the madhouse.
Hey, guys. I can't think of anybody being so clueless as Sko. It's just, this is just unbelievable.
I tell you, here's going to be the measure of how clueless Sko really is. Let's just wait and see, you know, if, first of all, this ever does actually happen. And who it is. I would find it just with unbelievable hilarity if the user that they chose to sue was somebody like Slashdot, or perhaps somebody like the Linux Show. I think that would be the whole hilarity in it.
That's not going to happen, though. I don't think they're after that. They wouldn't get any exposure then. But suing a Sko licensee?
Suing a Sko licensee. Yeah, the thing that I interpret, actually that story is already up on our site, Seeking Certainty. At least I think that's linked to that story. But regardless, I think the play there of suing their own user, if indeed it's true, is I happen to agree with the prediction of Larry Augustin back in January that it will become evident within 2 months' time. That's what Larry was saying back in the middle of January, that will become evident within 2 months' time that they're giving up on their business model altogether. And
what
they,
business model?
Well, they had a sham of a business model before. Therefore, the easiest targets for them to do would be to start nitpicking on minor violations of their own user base that would be easier to prove. So I'm not surprised at all. Any other news about SCOE you want to cover before we run out of time here? It is 8:44 here in Chicago.
I'm done, I think.
Okay. Any more stories, Arnie?
I've got a couple that that weren't on Russ's list. First of all, NASA is considering an open source license to publish their software. NASA, who has to be a big user of Linux code and Linux machines, their scientific stuff is undoubtedly Unix based. A lot of it is Unix based, and they're beginning to consider opening up their code. And they have a license. I've not heard much about the license yet, whether it's GPL compatible or not. They apparently have ripped some of the license wordage from the GPL, so it could very well be GPL compatible. We'll have to see what it pans out when they release that license in the first software. But this is a good move because NASA, being a very, very prominent government agency, it's encouraging to see government contributing back to the open source community. And the other item I have, I'll make this very quick, is Alabama has got a open source software bill which is going before the House. Senate Bill 276, proposed by State Senator Quentin Ross, and it's got passed its first challenge with a 7-1-1 vote in the Government Affairs Committee, where it initiated. This is a very simple bill, and if I may quote the reporter, this bill would expressly allow any state entity to use open source software in lieu of proprietary software whenever feasible. And that is basically it. It basically just keeps things simple and just says, hey, there's this stuff out there.
Yep.
And it's all right to use it.
And I think this is the way that the bills ought to be written.
I agree.
I think the early attempts at mandating, forcing people to use open source software, although from a taxpayer standpoint that does sound like a logical thing to do, it is frightening to people within government institutions to see grassroots bills thrown before them that mandate anything.
Yeah.
Bills need to be structured in the form of an advisory motion and to allow something, not to prevent other things, but to allow something. And Microsoft in there pitching at the government to mandate closed source for security purposes, this kind of a bill, the Alabama bill, is definitely needed and really the way we ought to be going as a community.
The person writing sponsoring the bill is also saying that they expect some fierce opposition. One other item from NewsObserver.com: demand grows for workers with Linux skills, and apparently the job market for Linux workers is quite good these days.
Yeah, it is. We've got that link up on the site right now too. Couple more quickies that we've got on the site just for people to reference to. Seeking certainty at ZDNet, story about the EV1 server, one of the nation's largest virtual host companies, sort of just caved into the legal threats behind SCO. I've done a good deal of studying about the story over the last 24 hours or so, and I'm going to just make a general comment about this right now, and I'll follow up on it on next week's show. And that general comment is, I smell a rat here. Something does not make sense in all of what I'm seeing in the reports that are both coming from SCO or the comments coming from the forum at EV1 server. There's something that is definitely not being said in all of these comments. and I'm going to expend a little effort during the course of the next week trying to dig into this, because something, it just doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't sit. Last thing we'll talk about before we go on to the break is on the list of things that are in the news this week, we've got a link to Judy Roberts' website. Judy Roberts is one of the artists that whose music we play here on the Linux Show. She's a Chicago jazz performer. We just wanted to give her a plug. She sent me an email a couple days ago saying that she's going on tour, going to spend quite a bit of time over the course of the next month in Arizona and Florida. And so if you're a listener of the Linux Show and you're in Arizona or Florida, click on the link, check out one of Judy's shows. She's generally pretty cheap to go to a jazz show. It's not like going to see the Eagles and paying $240 for a seat. You can generally get in for about $10. Go see Judy and tell her you were recommended by the Linux Show. She'll get a big hoot out of that for sure. But let's take a quick break and come back with Jeremy from LinuxQuestions.org talking about the new WikiWiki being released at LinuxQuestions.org. Everybody, kick back, listen to the tune, whatever Kevin puts on. We'll be right back. This is the Linux Show for March 2nd, 2004. We're getting into segment number two. We're going to have as our guest for this segment, Jeremy from LinuxQuestions.org. Just before the buzzer rang for us to be quiet, who should call in but Doc Searles in mid-move.
In mid-move. I've been sitting, yeah, it's been very frustrating. You know how it is when you move from one house to another, and the punch list includes almost everything you need to live, you know, like a working refrigerator and running water and toilets with handles and doors that close and stuff like that. And,
yeah, socks.
And AFX, and among other things, we have, you know, our old phones don't work and our new phones weren't hooked up yet, and I'm using our new, in fact, you've got the first call on our new household Panasonic sort of PBX system.
Yeah.
Does it sound okay? Does it make okay sound?
Oh, yeah, it sounds great.
That's good. Panasonic generally sounds good. And we've got some of the computers like some of the machinery and not others, like my wife's machine, just her favorite client just doesn't like this particular connection, and everybody points fingers at everybody else, and it's just, you know, so she's never used Mozilla before. She's on Mozilla, and she's despising it. Of course, she's been on Eudora for the last 9 years.
If she's a Eudora user, she's going to hate everything.
She's going to hate everything, because yeah. Eudora has a lot of unique and useful qualities to it, and Eudora's not a whole lot of help. They're pointing fingers at other people, you know, so I wish they just open source the damn thing, and maybe we could just, a cool thing, maybe make a suggestion to somebody rich like Mitch Kapoor. Say, Mitch, can you just pay these people to open source their stuff? Just pay them to do it for the good of the rest of us or something. Anyway, so that's my say. We're not done with it at all, and we were trying to clear out the other house before we give it up tomorrow. We're past the deadline for letting the house go. So anyway, well, that's basically it. So I'll listen in on the. I don't want to get in the way of the show.
That's okay. No problem. We have had a real good show so far, but we'll go ahead and bring Jeremy on in while we've still got a little bit of time left.
Hey, guys.
How you doing tonight, Jeremy?
Not too bad. How are you?
Doing fine. Glad to have you join us tonight. I'm going to be honest with everybody out there. We had originally lined up a different guest for the show, but last night the person who was going to be the guest got sick, and what them being sick has to do with being on a radio broadcast, you know, I can't figure that out. I think it was just nerves and the person chickened out, frankly, but we contacted Jeremy and said, hey, heard about the press release of LinuxQuestions.org's new wiki, and we got an open slot here. Why don't you come on and talk about the wiki? So, Jeremy, I'm going to ask you what I think is, to me, an incredibly sensible question, and that is, what the hell does a website that is essentially a 100% forum need with a second forum?
I thought it was going to be what's a wiki. I think the differences between the wiki and the forum are great enough that they really are going to fill two different niches. The forum right now really is aimed as kind of a threaded discussion, or, you know, where someone can ask a very specific question, someone can answer them, you can get more details, you know, and it kind of goes like a discussion. With the wiki, what we're aiming to do is really to create a knowledge base or repository where anyone can go edit knowledge. So it's more of a knowledge base than something that's threaded. That'll be the main difference.
Okay, are you going to... So explain to me how you're going to manage the wiki. So there's not going to be... There's just going to be open documents, and you're going to allow anybody to go in there and edit them?
Yep. Like most wikis, I mean, anyone can sign up and you can edit, except for the home page and a couple of the policy pages. Anyone can edit any page. So, you know, if you go in, you drill down to, say, a KDE page and you find an error, you think something needs to be added, you just add it.
Okay.
Just click edit this page and anyone can do anything.
Okay, well, what happens if somebody puts totally erroneous information down there?
To start out with, we have about 5 people, but I anticipate that growing significantly. People that are kind of, if you actually go to the wiki, wiki.linuxquestions.org, one of the top options you'll see is recent changes, which will allow you to easily see every page that's been changed, who changed it, and a little summary there. And any change can be undone just with one click. And it keeps a diff of from the beginning all the way through how many edits it's gone through. You can roll back any changes.
Okay, so if Joe Adbin from Microsoft came in and just started dropping goofy documents in to replace other documents, you could just roll back the history on the document and be back to where you were a couple of days ago.
Correct.
Uh-huh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now, from a content standpoint, you're managing this with WikiWiki, is that correct?
I'm sorry?
You're using the WikiWiki tool?
We're actually using MediaWiki, which is the one from Wikipedia.
Uh-huh, Wikipedia, yeah, okay. They're very similar.
Which is great software. Yeah, I mean, it came down to WikiWiki, PHPWiki, and then the MediaWiki, and they're all great tools. I think this one's going to scale the best, which is why we ended up going with it.
Now, from a strict content standpoint, you want this to be a quote-unquote, you just said, depository. So this is like life, the universe, and everything about Linux?
Pretty much anything's fair game. I mean, I started the homepage with just a few broad topics so people would have something to start with, but I would anticipate anything and everything Linux-related will end up here at some point.
So are you going to any of the documentation projects and suggesting that they deposit their documents at the wiki, or
actually, yeah, as it gets going, I'm not only going to contact the documentation projects, but other, you know, open source projects, and this actually already happened with Wine. One of the guys from CodeWeaver has already got into the Wine section and started adding some great stuff, and I'm going to try and get it so that as many open source projects as would like can participate and, you know, fill in their own sections. So you're kind of getting it right from the source then.
Yeah. It's got a place, that's for sure. And this has just been up, I saw the press release, what, 2 days ago? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I took it out of beta, yeah, 2-3 days ago now.
Yeah.
And it's already got, let me look, 1,278 pages, and it's gone through 1,600 edits.
Wow.
So it's not bad for a couple of days. We already making some good headway for a couple of days there.
Oh, yeah, for 2 days. That's remarkable.
And let me ask this, Doc. Are those stats on there somewhere?
Yep. If you go right to the main page, if you go down to special pages there.
The special pages? I mean, scroll down?
Yeah. And then I'll say there have been 21,600 page views and 12,078 page edits.
Where's that? I'm looking at. I see main menu. Is it under the main menu?
There, browse, edit, this page, context.
This is Linux question. Oh, LinuxQuestions.org.
No, that's the main site. This is a sub-site. It's wiki.linuxquestions.
Oh, there's the wiki. Okay, got it. Okay, that's where I was going on.
Yeah, wiki dot.
Wiki dot, okay. And which is it? Because I could point to it in Linux Journal. That's what I wanted to.
Okay, yeah, right on the left-hand side there.
Okay.
Look at special pages.
Okay.
The one from the bottom is
statistics.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, good. That's what I need.
The only thing I see, there's a bug there. That date's not right. We haven't been up since July 20th, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
I'll fix that.
You'll fix that, okay. You know that there's some rule that says the more numbers you generate, the more Murphy permutes, basically. Murphy only permutes.
This one of the people out on the IRC just said, wouldn't it be cool to have a U.S. Constitution wiki? Can you imagine the kind of constitution we would end up with pure democracy? Oh, whoa. Boy, would that be frightening. Oh, man. But no, this is very cool. Way to go, Jeremy.
Once we drive a lot of people from the site to this to kind of dump their knowledge in there, you know, I really anticipate it getting quite full fairly rapidly.
Well, yeah, especially if you go and just solicit at some of the documentation projects.
Mm-hmm.
They've got websites full of stuff already, and so the documents already exist. The only thing that you're going to have to convince them of is to use you as a depository instead of their own form or whatever, their own Facomatic or whatever they're using for their depository. But, no, this is very cool.
And it's all open source with a free license from it's one of the Creative Commons licenses.
Yeah.
I tried to pick one of the most lenient ones so you can make derivative works, you can copy, you could even sell it. I mean, I didn't initiate the non-commercial clause, so you can pretty much do what you want with it.
Well, I think that's the way it ought to be.
I'm wondering, what I've done as often as I can with my own stuff is I just put it in the public domain all the way. And I'm wondering why, but I notice very few people do that, and I'm wondering what the reason for that is. Maybe it's because that's not a real license, perhaps? I don't know. It's a declaration, whatever that means.
I don't know, Doc.
I don't know either.
There's got to be a legal...
IANAL and all that.
Yeah, there's a legal subtlety there that I just don't get. But, I think that, you know, more power to people. If they can take a derivative work and make a few bucks off of it, why not?
Oh, sure,
Yeah, why not?
Absolutely.
That's the whole thing about humanity standing on the shoulders of our forefathers. We've been making money off of our forefathers for thousands of years. Might as well keep it going and support entrepreneurism around the world. Here's another post on the IRC. The notion of a wiki is interesting, inviting people to just dump on your site. That is indeed a thought. But, congratulations. What else might we expect new out of Jeremy in the next couple months?
I'm proud to say we're going to hit two milestones. One probably this week and then one probably next month, and that's we're going to hit 100,000 users probably this week, and then 1 million posts probably next month, late April. We're pretty happy to hit both of those. After that, I'm trying to get an open source / Linux job site going for the people that are skilled in open source but unfortunately unemployed.
Yeah. Have you started that yet? Because I know somebody else is starting one up. They may want to just hook up with them.
Oh, yeah. I've kind of started it. I'm trying to wade through some of the legal implications of it.
This person may have already waded through the legal implications. That's why I was going to hook you up.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Okay, well, we'll do that offline at another time.
Okay.
But, very cool. Very cool indeed. Well, thanks for stopping by, and if I tell you what, when you do pass your milestone, make sure if you will that you give us a little heads up, a little email. We'll make an announcement on the show, candles, have a little cake.
One other thing I want to say: when I was on the show at Linux World, I was kind of naming my sponsors, and I forgot to name my by far biggest sponsor. And they're not only Linux Questions' biggest sponsor, they also employ me, too, so I should probably thank them.
Well, go right ahead.
Before it is the second time, Choice One Online is a company that I work for, and it's kind of lucky enough that what they do has absolutely nothing really to do with Linux, but I have a boss who really understands and gets open source and, allows me to do Linux Questions and it really allows me to use a lot of open source and promote open source in my employment, which I think is not always the case for some people, unfortunately. So.
No, you're right. Too often we are hamstrung by our employers, and so we should give them the kudos when it is allowed. So, no problem. I have no problem giving them a plug.
And, if anyone listening to the show has any suggestions, feel free. Well, you know, the site's there for the Linux community. It's not there for me. So if you have an suggestion on the wiki or the forums or really anything, always happy to hear.
Oh, okay. We would like to make one other comment tonight before we close out the show. And this is, again, something new I'm going to try to do with the Linux Show. I've been attempting to review books. And, I'll get a book and start working on it and put it aside and start working on it. And so what I've decided I'm going to do differently in terms of reviewing books is I'm going to tell people the books that I'm going to review, or the books that somebody else on the panel is going to review, so that perhaps maybe one of you or two of you or 10 of you might also want to go out and take a look at the book. You don't have to go buy it. Just go to the bookstore, take a look at it, scan it over so that you can give us your opinions on the book.
And enter it into our book review section, too.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to be doing is for the month of March, the book that I'm going to be working on, I think, is perhaps one of the coolest books in general I've seen come out in a number of years. It fell into my hands because there's a chapter in it on Linux, but it's not a Linux book. It is a book called Hardware Hacking, Having Fun While You Void Your Warranties. This is a book that is written by a guy by the name of Joe Grand. He's got an editorial team of contributors. But in this book, there is all kinds of little hack projects in terms of making little blue boxes and FireWire devices. They've even got projects in here for old PCs that have been out of date for years and years and years. There's some wonderful little projects in this book. So again, the title of the book is Hacking Hardware, Having Fun while Voiding Your Warranty. And it's published by Syngress, Syngress. It is in the bookstores right now. That's what I'm going to be working on. Actually, I'm going to be picking a project sometime in the next 2 days, and I'm actually going to build one of the projects in this book during the course of the month. So take a look at it at the bookstore if you are out and about in the next week or two, and we'll talk about that in the very near future. So, that's it for tonight, everybody. Make sure you do check out our website. Go check out Jeremy's new website, wiki.linuxquestions.org. And we'll have a little fun with his wiki during the course of the next week. So until next week, everybody, hang in there. We'll be back with another edition of the Linux Show. Thanks a lot for stopping by. Keep telling your friends. Keep clicking on that PayPal button. We need your contributions. So thanks a lot, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
We'll be back next week. We're out of here.
He put all of his soul into a tenor saxophone. He had his way of talking, 'twas a language all his own. Life's story, love and glory, if you listen when it plays it for you. Now listen and listen and dig it. Can't you dig it? Lester Young is playing what he's feeling, chilling and dancing. someone.